I want to think this morning as we start considering important three-digit numbers. There are certain situations that to know these numbers is very important. For instance, let's say you're at home, you've got an emergency, you need immediate professional help. What number do you dial? Right, 911. Let's say you're digging in your yard. You're doing some outdoor work. You want to make sure you don't hit a cable or a wire, a pipe. What number do you call to check first? 811. Some of you are saying right now, now you tell me. If you're going to dial a local number, what three digits do you have to dial first? Right, the area code, 317. I remember a few years ago when this was going into effect and somebody had left me a message at the church, they were waiting on my phone call back to them. So I called over and over again, didn't get them. I got a busy signal every time. Called them the next day, I kept getting a busy signal. I finally said this out loud to my assistant, Marcia Thompson. I said, I can't get through to these people. She said, well, you know you have to dial the area code first, right? I said, yeah, I knew that, right. If you're in an emergency, if you need direction, if you're trying to get through to someone, it's important to know certain numbers. I want to offer one more to you today. 419. It stands for Philippians chapter 4, verse 19. You'll see the words on the screen right now. I want you to say them with me. Let's just say them out loud together. And my God will supply every need of yours according to his riches and glory in Christ Jesus. Now, here's my hope for you today, that by the end of this sermon, you are going to be so convicted about the spiritual truth of this verse that you're going to want to plaster 419 everywhere you can. You're going to want to put it on the dashboard of your car, on your laptop computer, maybe get a little tattoo that says 419, because you're going to realize that in many situations in your life, you need to dial that number into your spiritual memory and to recall that my God can supply all my needs. This is a good way for us to end our series, Letting Go. We've talked about how this year we've had to let go of a lot of things. We've had to let go of certainty. We've had to let go of many of our goals that we had. We've had to let go of loved ones. And then last Sunday, boy, Pastor Javon, what a powerful sermon as he talked about many of our sources of contentment that we've had to let go of and understand that contentment is not based on circumstances. You know, that's graduate level stuff right there. Well, one thing we've had to let go of this year, we've not talked about a lot in this series, and it should be quite obvious. We've had to let go of church. At least the way we have often experienced church up until this time. We've not been able to worship in this room together as the gathered community. We've had to do it online. And then after we started 4 weeks of being back in person, we've had to go back. It's been very different. Somebody sent me this picture the other day, back at the start of the pandemic. This is their pet cat watching online worship with them as a family. And as you can see, I mean, I have got that cat's attention during the sermon that day. And I understand that at the end of that sermon, little Tabby professed faith and has started to tithe. So you never know what online worship can lead to and the new opportunities it creates. If your pets are watching with you right now, let us know so that we can count them in the attendance. Now, this has been a stewardship series. And some of you who are familiar with what stewardship is all about are wondering why we've not talked more about money. If a stewardship series is to prepare us for this Sunday when we make a pledge of our support to the church for the coming year, why haven't we talked more about giving? And that's because the stewardship of our resources depend on things that have nothing to do with money. Stewardship depends on the things we've been talking about in this series, our trust in God, making the aim of our life to let God use us and to serve God, to depend on God's care and God's provisions, and to understand that we can find contentment in every situation. If we have that, giving becomes a joy. Now, we have used in this series Paul's letter to the Philippians. We've learned a lot about Philippi, and I'll mention that next September of 2021, Susan and I are going to be leading a trip of St. Luke's with Bob Zare to Greece and the Holy Land. We're going to travel the steps of Paul and do a Holy Land tour as a part of that. And if you'd like to be on that trip, and we are very confident we're going to be able to travel fully, safely, freely at that time, contact Bob Zare or call the church, ask for my assistant, Marcia Thompson. We'll get information to you. Now, we've learned in this series why Paul wrote to the Philippians, and there were several reasons. One, he wrote to encourage them. Over and over, he says to them, rejoice. Which you would think, being the intellect that Paul was, he would write to the Philippians with lots of logical, persuasive arguments about why they should trust God in the midst of their discouragement. But Paul understood you don't get into a debate with discouragement. Discouragement wins every time. Discouragement will discredit logic. You have to get inside the heart. He tells people, rejoice. That's a great place to make a plug for our Advent series this year, starting in just a couple of weeks. We're going to do a series leading up to Christmas on the music of Christmas, because God's presence and hope is communicated through song in a way that words just don't match. We're calling this series A Weary World Rejoices. Now, another reason Paul wrote to the Philippians was to let them know how he was doing. He was in prison. The people had gotten word. They were concerned about Paul. They wrote inquiring to his welfare, and they sent gifts with the letter. They often sent gifts to Paul. And that's the third reason Paul wrote to them. He wrote to say thank you. Now, giving thanks when we've received a gift is important. We're taught that as little children, aren't we? If you received something when you were a small child and you didn't make a response, what did your parents ask you? What do you say? You say thanks. Americans are especially good at saying thanks. When I lived in England years ago, I got to be good friends with a young married couple my age, and that Christmas we gave gifts to each other. I opened their gift, it was a shirt. And I just sort of went on and on about it. I thanked them, but I made observation about the shirt, the softness of the material, the fabric, the pattern of it. And finally, the husband said, Rob, it's just a shirt. You know, you Americans, he said, you're so effusive when it comes to giving thanks. Well, in Paul's letter to the Philippians, it's clear that he is no American. He kind of struggles saying thanks to the Philippians. Look at his response. It was kind of you to share my distress. No other church shared with me in the matter of giving and receiving except you alone. For even when I was in Thessalonica, you sent me help for my needs more than once. Paul is writing finally at last. He waits until the end of the letter to say, I want to acknowledge the gift that you sent me. Now, why he felt the need to throw other churches under the bus, I don't know. But he's acknowledging their gift. But look what he says next. Not that I seek the gift, but I seek the profit that accumulates to your account. I have been paid in full and have more than enough. What a thank you note. How do you think the people in Philippi must have felt? I want you to know I got your gift. You remembered me. Nobody else seemed to, but you did. But I want you to know I don't really need it. What kind of thanks is that? If you read the letter to the Philippians, one thing you'll notice is Paul doesn't even say thank you. Why? Why does Paul have a hard time saying thanks? Some believe it's because Paul was very sensitive about the topic of money. In other places where Paul traveled, he was criticized for profiting from his ministry. something Paul was greatly offended by. On many occasions, he wrote in his letters, "You people know, you know that when I was with you, I worked to earn everything I have. I didn't take one thin dime from you folks." Paul wanted people to know. He wasn't one of those preachers who has a way of constantly seeking a gift. Have you ever heard folks like that? Pastors who about August start working in a Colts football illustration into every sermon and saying, "Oh, you all know how much I love going to Colts games. You know how fun it is at those Colts games. What are those sermons about?" Paul says, "I want you to know, I'm not a pastor like that. I know what can happen when you start doing it for the gifts. When you begin to say, oh, what's in it for me? What am I doing all this for anyway? It's getting hard. It's getting difficult. What's in it for me?" Once you go down that road, you discover that nothing takes the wind out of the sail than to measure your motivation by a dollar figure. Paul says, "I want you to know, I'm not like that." Others say that Paul had a hard time saying thanks because he was proud. He was proud. You know, it's one thing to give a gift to somebody, give a gift that somebody doesn't really need. It's kind of easy to say thanks, but when it's something you need, oh, that's tricky. It's tricky to give a gift somebody needs without making them feel needy. My preaching professor in seminary used to always say, "Be careful when you go to do charitable work that you lay your gifts gently upon the pride of others." Maybe Paul had a hard time saying thanks because he was proud. I don't know. I'm not sure. It seems to me something deeper is going on in the letter. When you scratch around at what Paul is saying, it just seems that something more is going on. Here's what I believe, for what it's worth. When you take all of the different translations of Philippians, the work of scholars trying to digest and decipher what Paul is saying with his unusual words, with his awkward phrases, they give different nuances of the messages. And when you put it together, I believe this is what Paul was saying. Now, understand, this is the RSV, Rob's Standard Version. "I don't seek your gift. I'm not dependent on it. But I do seek the blessing that comes from generosity. That's what I want for you. To know that when you seek to supply the needs of others, you will find that God supplies all your needs. And when you know that, you have it all." That thought reminds me of an old John Grisham book I read years ago called The Testament. It wasn't as popular as some of Grisham's other books like The Firm or A Time to Kill, but it's a good book. It starts with a multi-billionaire who can afford anything money can buy except happiness. He's been married 3 times. His grown children are just like him. They're greedy and they're hard-hearted. And the man kills himself. He has nothing to live for. But in his will, he has left all of his billions, not to the former wives and not to the children, but to an illegitimate daughter who grew up to become a missionary in the jungles of Brazil. The family contests the will, and that's when the legal drama starts. And just like all of John Grisham's other books, it turns into a legal drama. The law firm handling the will sends a washed-out lawyer to go down to Brazil and find this daughter to let her know about the will. The lawyer is a lot like the deceased billionaire. He based his life believing that having leads to happiness. And he's finding out it's not true. He's lost his family. He's an alcoholic struggling to break free of his addiction, but he's losing the battle. He goes down to Brazil, hires a guide to lead him up the river through the jungles. He gets sick, nearly dies, but finally he finds the daughter and he delivers the news that he thinks is going to be the best thing she's ever heard. She is now a billionaire, but she says, "I don't want it. I have everything I need." He looks around and he's dumbfounded. There's no running water. There's no indoor plumbing. There's no medical care. How can she say such a thing? But he stays there for a while. He gets to know her. She shares her faith with him. And as he listens to her talk about her trust in God, he begins to sense that she has something he needs. And he finds himself starting to let go of things he had always trusted in his whole life, to receive something he never had. She finally decides that if she's going to have all of this money, then she wants to create a trust so that it goes to her mission and to the many charities that she supported. He goes back to the States to settle the will and then returns to inform her. And when he returns, he finds out that she died of malaria. But she left a will. She put him in charge of the trust. And the book ends with this man having a new purpose in his life and being at peace. Now, it's just fiction. It's not real. But it's true. Isn't that what the spiritual life is like? That the spiritual life seems like fiction because it's based on things you can't see or prove, but when you trust in it, when you rely on it, you discover it's real. It's true. That's what I believe Paul was telling the Philippians. I believe Paul was writing to them and using the opportunity to recognize the gifts that they had given them to share something with him that was the secret of his life. To say to them, I know that you already believe this. I know that you know it's true, but it's easy to forget. It's easy to let the demands of life turn our spiritual lives into something that we just come to think is make-believe. It's not real after all. And we have to trust it all over again. I want you to know what I have found. That my God is able to supply all your needs according to his riches and glory through Jesus Christ. 4:19. It's true. It's real. I know you St. Lukers believe this. I know you have found it to be true. During this pandemic, I've received so many letters and emails from you. They often begin the same way. I want to thank you. And they'll thank the church for different reasons, maybe for the spiritual encouragement we've provided, maybe for the classes and the learning opportunities, maybe for the mission work that we're doing. But then they will often have that but in there. And then they will describe what's happened to them in the pandemic. And sometimes what people share and these messages will leave me in tears in my office, thinking about how hard this time has been. But they'll end it. They'll end it on this upbeat note of saying, but I want to thank the church because I have discovered again in my life this truth that God has supplied. God has taken care of me. I know it's true. Thank you for reminding me. Thank you for helping me experience that. I remember the first time I learned it as a pastor. I was serving a church that started a soup kitchen because two women in the congregation who didn't even know each other had the same vision. They got together, they shared their vision with other people, they formed a little board, they created something called the Open Door that became a soup kitchen, a food pantry, a thrift shop. And they used to drive our finance committee crazy because if they had something they needed, they would go get it. and then worry about finding a way to pay for it. Well, shortly after they opened, they had such a flood of need, they had to make new investments in equipment they didn't have. And the finance committee said, we don't have the money to foot that bill. You're going to have to do a fundraiser. So I was with them in a meeting one night, and they were wondering what they could do to raise money to meet this bill. And I said, well, you know, next month we have our end of summer picnic. Every year we would do this in August. We'd have a big picnic. Lots of people would turn out for it. And so the group said, great, that's what we're going to do. We're going to provide the meal and let it be a fundraiser. So a couple of people on the committee who were financially minded, they got to work, and man, they did their homework. They went back 5 years studying the attendance at the picnic, and they came up with what they believed was going to be the anticipated attendance in good weather. They did two scenarios. If it rains, well, then we got to be prepared for this. They took how much they had invested in equipment, how much the food for the picnic would cost. They added it up, $5,050. Now, you're wondering, how would I remember that it was $5,050? We'll get there in a moment. They had a meeting to talk about what they would do to get the money that they would have, and the people who'd been working on this, measuring the attendance, said, now, you add up the 5,050, you divide it by this attendance figure. If we charge everyone this amount, this is what we'll do. The two matriarchs of the group said, uh-uh. The other committee said, what do you mean, uh-uh? They said, we're not going to charge people. They all looked at each other kind of dumbfounded and said, we thought this was supposed to be a fundraiser. It is. Well, how are we going to get the money? We're going to let it be a free will offering, they said. The finance people said, okay, it'll be a free will offering, but we're at least going to put a sign out that says we need $5,050. The women said, uh-uh, we're not going to do that. We're going to let people give as God moves them to give. We have trusted God all along, and we're going to keep doing that. They looked at me. I kind of felt like, you know, can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm really giving in to the finance people here. They're right. But I wasn't about to go against the matriarchs, so I stayed out of it. They put on the picnic. They put up a sign, free will offering for the open door. That was it. People put money in a basket. And when it was over, I stood at a distance as I watched them get the basket and go count. And I watched them count, and they came to the last dollar. And I noticed that they all froze. And they looked at each other like they had just seen a ghost. How much do you think they collected? You know the answer. $5,050. On the nose. Now, I don't know what you do with a story like that. It might seem like total fiction to you, but I was there. I know it's real. I could go on with story after story of experiencing 419 in my life. That my God is able to supply all our needs. You would think it would just be easy for me to live with that. But every new challenge makes me question. Every new difficulty makes me wring my hands and wonder, God, oh, how are we ever going to get through this? Are you really going to take care of me this time? I don't know. And I have to dial up 419 all over again and say, I really do believe that. I've got to trust it again. And maybe that's where you are today. You've got to trust it again all over like it's the first time. And believe that God supplies. I invite you to take your pledge card that you hopefully received in the mail in recent days. And if you haven't filled it out yet, in just a moment, we're going to watch a video, and I want you to fill it out during that video. But I want to say some things to different groups of you this morning. First, I want to address those of you who are just not in a place to fill out a financial portion of your card today. You're just not in that place, and you don't need to feel guilty. Maybe your pledge today is, I will supply again. I'm going to pledge today that at some point ahead, I will supply again. I can't right now. The Bible teaches that God does not expect of us what we are unable to do. And for others, some things have changed in your life. Maybe you're not able to supply as you once did, but you're going to do the best with what you have. And that's what God asks of us. But there's another group I want to talk to this morning. And that is those of you who have not struggled during this pandemic. In fact, this pandemic's been good. You've done very well during this time. And you don't need to be embarrassed about that. You don't need to hide the fact, because it's not just your doing if you believe 419. God is your supplier. God has put you in this position today so that God can use you to supply the needs of others. And out of your supply, others can be blessed. So as we get ready to fill out our cards, I want you to see this video that celebrates our year in ministry this year in 2020. As difficult, as crazy as it's been, the gifts that you have made possible to support the ministry of St. Luke's. I can't say thanks enough. I can't say thanks enough. You've allowed our staff to stay employed. You've allowed us to do what it takes to provide worship. You've allowed us to do mission and to provide care. Thanks. So watch this video. Let's take a moment to fill out our cards right now.
Too scared to move and walk out of this tomb. Buried underneath the lies that you believed. Safe and sound, stuck in the ground, too lost to be found. You're just asleep, and it's time.
Well, if that song doesn't rise you up, I don't know what would. I love that song, Rise Up, because that's what we're going to do in our country this year. We're going to rise up. We're going to move past this period of life. But I hope we don't move past it unchanged. I hope we move past it with a deeper reason to say, I know my God is able to supply all my needs. 419. I believe it anew. Now, there are a number of ways that you can respond with your card today. You can mail it back to the church. You can drop it by the church. You can go online to the website and fill out an e-version of the pledge card. Or here's a way we've never done before. Right now, you can call the church and phone in your pledge. We've got people sitting at phones right now. You see at the bottom of the screen the church website if you want to do it electronically, or the phone number, and call in your pledge. And when you make a pledge, as we have done in years past, you get to have a coffee mug that is what we're going to use for 2021. Our 2021 coffee mug that we give to visitors, you're going to be the first one to get it. And in your mug, we're going to bring them to you. You can't walk forward and get them this year in the sanctuary, so we're going to deliver them to you. And in your mug, there's going to be a 419 sticker. And I want you to put that sticker someplace that you'll see it all the time. You will remember this 419 truth, and you're going to say, I believe that. I know that it's not fiction. I'm going to live by that truth. You might even use it as a way to get other people asking you questions. You can pick up more from the church. We're going to have them in the office. Come by and get a handful of them. Put them all over the place. When somebody sees it, says, what's the 419 about? Wow, what an opening. You get to share what you believe. You get to share about St. Luke's. So it's a great opportunity to tell others and welcome them into this community of faith. So as we close, let's join together now as we sing our closing hymn.